This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 206. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
The Trinity of Sin and crossovers are revealed. It's a dark and owly night. The Snow Queen loves a good story, and the numbers are in. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, May 13th, 2012. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. And you can subscribe via iTunes, where you can leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Like us at facebook.com/sfppn. Follow us on Twitter @sfppn. Or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Well, starting off, we're going to wrap up our big contest with the winner of the Green Arrow Quiver by Kevin Smith hardcover. And the winner is...
Greg Durham.
It's Greg Durham. And so send us your address. And
email it to us, yes.
Yeah, email it to us and we'll get that out to you. And congratulations.
Woohoo!
DC Comics, the new 52 Free Comic Book Day special. By Johns, Lee, Rice, Ha, Rocafort, Williams, and Prado. Now, we didn't get a chance to review this last week because it didn't come out till Free Comic Book Day on Saturday. So I thought we'd cover it today. The first half of the book reintroduces us to new characters, but it's really reintroducing. This concept of the Trinity of Sin, which as far as I can tell is new as a name. And these three people are standing before the Rock of Eternity, which we know from the Shazam Captain Marvel title. And apparently we're seeing the beings that form the initials for Shazam in front of it. And they're passing judgment. So first, there's this man who has a huge amount of greed. And they turn his hair white. And they tell him he'll live forever to see the greed of man. And he will be a stranger. A phantom stranger.
So, just because I don't know, what was the origin of the old phantom stranger, or did we know?
We never really knew. I don't think there's ever been a definitive origin before for phantom stranger, but it had nothing to do with Captain Marvel before.
Right. Okay.
Then we have a second man who says, you know, I challenge your authority to even pass judgment on me. They're going to rue the day when they do this. And so they make him forget his name, and he loses his actual face, and he becomes the Question.
But we did know origins for the old Question, right?
It had nothing supernatural to do with anything
right.
before. It was just a guy who decided to fight crime, and to do so, he developed this substance, this mask he could put upon his face that made it look like he didn't have a face.
So this is a really interesting turn of events,
right.
so to speak.
So now it's supernatural. And then there's this woman who's apparently the actual Pandora of Pandora's Box fame. And she is given an eternity of evil, as they call it. So we cut to present day, and we're with Thomas Stone, who's Cyborg's father. And they're in the Red Room, and they're seeing images on this huge screen of what is clearly Earth 2, because it's the cover of Earth 2. Pandora's there, but she hasn't found what she's looking for. So she's apparently breaking to all these places trying to find something. Then we cut over to Argus's headquarters, and Steve Trevor is in the Black Room, which hides away these dangerous objects because they're just too dangerous for the general public to have or even know of. A few things in there, and I had to look this up, a few things on the net in the forums to see if other people recognize some of these things, but some of them are pretty obvious. One is the haunted tank. There's these artifacts that some people think are the Demons 3 artifacts, And the Demons 3 was the first Justice League story in continuity in the Silver Age. Another theory is it's the Gamma Gong from Kanjur Row. There's a lot of theories on that. Another piece is what appears to be Etrigan's armor. And then one, which is pretty obvious, is Psycho Pirate's mask. Now, Psycho Pirate's particularly interesting because, again, prior to a whole reboot, he was the only one who truly remembered the multiverses before they came back, because he was directly involved in the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, he was the only one who had a clear idea of what the multiverse was, but he was in an insane asylum.
Now, see, I was more intrigued by the mention of the other rooms, like the circus.
Right.
And then he also mentioned that Black Orchid was around somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So those are both intriguing things. These rooms reminded me of Warehouse 13.
Yeah, kind of. So Pandora breaks into the black room and she grabs the skull. And apparently that's what she was looking for.
Well, that's the box.
Right. Yeah.
Her box.
Yeah, yeah, the actual Pandora's box with a skull in it.
Well, I thought the skull was the box.
Oh, I thought it was within a box.
It was in a box, okay. But I think the box is in a box.
Then we cut to the near future and this gatefold fold-out teaser of the Trinity War that's coming next year. And apparently this is going to be the next big crossover.
And did you see Batman was wearing the skull around his neck?
Yeah. So there's various leaguers fighting among themselves, including the ones we already know are in their league, plus Hawkman, Green Arrow, Adam, Black Adam, Metamorpho, the Element Girl.
Do you think she should be Metamorpha?
I don't know, but that's what they always just referred to her as the Element Girl previously. We'll see what her actual name is when she shows up. But she was made into the character you see here during Flashpoint. At least she looks very much like the Element Girl in Flashpoint. We don't know about that. There's a different Green Lantern. Maybe it's Jon Stewart. We don't know. But clearly it's a different Green Lantern. Someone who looks very much like Vibe from the Justice League Detroit era. We don't know what the deal is with Vibe showing up. And then the second half of the book is just teasers for the Wave 2 titles. So that was the big Free Comic Book Day event. And generally what they do in these and what they've done the last few years is just tease future events coming up more than anything. Just give you a taste of what's coming.
So will those things all appear probably in another book that we actually buy?
Not necessarily all these panels, but all these concepts certainly were.
Well, that's what I was kind of aiming for, the panels.
Right. Some of these panels, well, certainly the stuff in the second half are the actual panels
right.
from the books. But the first half, some of it might show up. We'll see. Night of the Owls crossover. So we're going to talk about the books that we actually get because it's happening in all the Bat books, but we're only covering the ones we get because I'm not going to go and buy those other ones just
That was going to be my question,
right.
was were you the least bit tempted
no.
to go and buy the other titles?
No, because it's pretty clear that if I had only been buying Batman and nothing else, I'd still kind of know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get more information from the other books, but it's not like you had to read them. So let's start with Batman number 9 by Snyder and Capullo. So Bruce is taking out the Talons in the Batcave, and he's wearing his new armor. And I love how the cave artifacts help him out. He activates the robot dinosaur, and
yeah.
you've already seen the dinosaur as this memento from a previous case. And it's a robot, so he just activates it and has him stomp a bunch of Talons. He gets in the Batmobile, and he basically runs over another Talon. And then the bats come out, the actual bats of the Batcave, and attack the Talons. Alfred is cooling off the cave in order to stop them, because Bruce has figured out that if it gets cold enough, they can't regenerate, or they can't regenerate as quickly. Alfred is in the armory frantically trying to get the temperature down in the cave to the point where it'd be effective, and he finally does. So Bruce is off to save the city and stop the Court of Owls. Then there's a backup story called Fall of the House of Wayne. It says it's a three-parter, and it's a story of Alfred's father as butler to the Waynes, and he apparently knows of the Owls. So Is he a member of the owls? Is he fighting the owls? We really don't know. But he's warning Alfred in this letter of, you know, eventually you're going to step into my duties, and when you do, this is what you need to know.
I sort of like the idea that he was there, Alfred's dad was there, even while Bruce was a little boy.
Right.
I hadn't gotten the feeling of that from previous continuities, but it certainly explains the idea that Alfred actually was on the stage for a long time.
Right, and it makes Alfred maybe a little younger than we've seen in the past. He's maybe a little closer to Bruce's age than
he was
before.
I don't know. I still think he's like maybe 15 or 20 years older.
Right. He's still older. But
yeah, but not like 90 years older.
Exactly. Batman and Robin number 9 by Tomasi, Garbett, and Clark. So Robin is ordered to go save the general of the National Guard for Gotham City. Robin says, "You're in danger. We need to get you to safety." He doesn't believe it until he's attacked. And so Robin starts ordering the troops around. And at first they don't listen to him. He makes it clear, "I know far more than you do about all of this and military tactics." And he comes up with these brilliant military tactics to try to save the general. This Talon was ordered to kill his ancestors. We get a flashback to like 200 years before, because again, the Talons are kept in this storage until they're needed, and because they could regenerate, they're in some cases hundreds of years old. And this Talon's been kept around to basically finish the job. We learn that one of this one line's ancestors survived, and the general is descendant of this guy, so it's time to finish the job, finally.
He needs to be killed because the owls have appropriated things that are his rightful inheritance.
Yeah. And so Robin ends up stringing him up and then cuts his head off.
Figures he can't regenerate
without a head
if the parts aren't together.
Mm-hmm. Batgirl number 9 by Simone and Syaf. This is a story of a female Talon who is a victim of Nagasaki and ends up in Haley's circus at one point. And we cut back to the present, and this particular Talon is pretty much kicking Barbara's ass and then suddenly disappears and leaves this slip of paper with Barbara. Meanwhile, Commissioner Gordon is told to ignore the whole crisis and just sit in your office or Barbara dies.
Hmm.
And so
I'm thinking that the Talon isn't a victim of Nagasaki. She was hurt by one of the paper balloons that flew to Oregon, wasn't she?
But, I mean, then why?
Because they came from Nagasaki.
Right.
The balloon that killed her came from Nagasaki, or that injured her came from Nagasaki.
But I also assumed she was somehow involved in the atom bomb. I don't know.
Well, that's where the girl.
Right.
It was very confusing because there was this whole story about the girl writing a letter to her family.
Right.
And the girl was building the paper balloons.
Right.
And those balloons then floated over the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one that exploded in Oregon and killed a family at a picnic.
Yeah.
With only one survivor, which I thought was this girl.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't get that at all. Okay, so in any case, Barbara figures out what the paper is, which apparently Barbara then knows more than we do, and they talk about the paper balloon bombs. And those versions of those bombs are now blowing up police headquarters. And Barbara is fighting Talon on the roof of the police headquarters, and they fall but somehow survive. And Gordon decides he can't stand aside anymore. He has to do something, so he switches on the bat signal. But it's an owl signal now.
So it was all reverse psychology
by
the court of owls.
They wanted him to turn
off
turn on the signal.
Yes.
Ferris number 3 by Vertigo, by Willingham and Jimenez. So you were right. The story is not about the Snow Queen. It's about a different evil queen.
So it's very Scheherazade-like.
Exactly. So the evil queen goes to attack Briar Rose's christening because she wasn't invited. And these other magical figures are giving her these gifts, can sing like a bird, and
I
and
love
all this
that
wit.
One.
Yeah.
Because she actually sings like
a
bird.
It sounds
chirp,
like she's
chirp,
chirping.
Chirp, chirp, chirp.
She gives Briar the sleeping curse at midnight. And at midnight is when the curse is the most powerful. And again, the curse is she's going to eventually prick her finger, and when she does, she's going to fall into...
Well, the curse is actually that she dies.
Right. Oh, I thought she slept forever.
No, she dies.
Ah.
That there's one fairy that hasn't given her present yet, and she'll mitigate that to she sleeps forever.
Okay.
That wasn't in here, but that's in the original
story. That's in the original story. So we assume that's coming up in the next part.
Yes.
So back to the Snow Queen. The imp is telling her that he's only working for Alibaba because of the bottle, because of the lamp, because it's in his control. So he's only technically following the rules, although he basically wants her to take the lamp. And she's only keeping them alive because she's enjoying the story. She's like, I want to know more about this story, because as you said, it's very Scheherazade-like. And the imp says she knows how to save all of them, including the Snow Queen. And she's going to find out how all in the story, which is what we're going to hear more of next time. So what do you think of Ferris so far?
I like it. I like Fables better.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
But I still like Ferris.
Mm-hmm. Let's go on to some industry news. So we're now 6 months into the new 52. And I want to thank ComicsBeat.com for the following info. The overall numbers are pretty much going back to normal. In other words, pre-52 numbers. 18 of the 52 titles sold under 20K. So who is doing well as of March, as of the March issues? Well, these titles have only lost 30% of their issue one figures. Justice League at 136K. Detective at 89K. Batman and Robin is 68K, Aquaman 62K, Nightwing 50K, Swamp Thing 40K, and Animal Man 36K. So relative to their issue one, they've dropped less than 30%, which means they've essentially stabilized. So in terms of the remaining titles that we actually get, just some numbers here. Batman is at 131K, Action at 91, Green Lantern at 90, Superman 66, Flash 64, Teen Titans and Wonder Woman are both at 51K, Batgirl's at 50, Green Lantern New Guardians is at 48, Catwoman is at 39, Supergirl at 37, JL Dark is at 36, JLI 35K, we have Superboy at 33K, Ferris, only because it was a number one, was at 31K, and I wanted to note that. That's a huge number for Vertigo. Birds of Prey at 29, Stormwatch at 24, Demon Knights at 22, Resurrection Man at 17. Anything under 20,000 is in danger, I would say. Blue Beetle is at only 15K. Mr. Terrific was at 11K, but you have to put an asterisk by that because that was the last issue.
Now, how many copies do you suppose they have to sell to break even on an issue?
Generally, from what I've seen, if they're getting at least 20, they're okay.
And do you think a lot of it depends? Like, certainly some artists and authors get paid more than others.
Right, right. So if you've got a superstar artist and he's got a low-running title and you're paying him a lot more, you're far more likely to drop him than some rookie. A couple other figures here. Action is 188% up from 1 year ago, while Justice League is up 170%. So that means that both of them are doing far better than they were prior to pre-52. The overall DC average is 23K. That is down 48% from 6 months ago, but up 23% from 1 year ago. So there was the big bump for the issue ones of the new 52. It's down from then, but they're doing better than they were a year ago. If that all makes sense.
You know, I don't really see that Justice League or these big titles are any better than they were.
I think they are pushing them a lot more.
Yeah.
I think overall there's a lot more advertising for them.
So they really wouldn't have needed...
If they just would have advertised the titles prior to all this.
Right.
But you got to have some gimmick in order to push the advertising.
Well, and
so
I suppose...
is the gimmick.
You know, people can say, oh, well, I got the number one. I have the run from the start.
Sure. We'll continue to watch this and see what the numbers do. You know, the next thing will be a year from now when we're looking at September. What are the numbers for the 52 at that point? I'm guessing there'll be another culling of titles between now and September, some more of the titles will go away. I can't see how Blue Beetle, for example, is going to survive at 15K.
I feel bad because I like Blue Beetle.
Yeah, I do too, but it's just not doing well.
I don't know. I almost think that if they took some of these titles and not necessarily put them into the Johnny DC line, but just made them more kid-friendly, but as a part of the same DC universe,
continuity. They
might be better.
That would help. All right, before we get out of here, time is playing America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I am ready.
Okay, I'm about to push the button. Go.
TV related?
No.
Movie related?
Yes.
Movie that's coming out?
Yes.
Big movie that's coming out?
Well, I imagine they hope
they won't,
so.
Well, it's a tentpole movie?
They hope
it is?
Uh-huh.
Okay, is it genre related?
Yes.
Is it can't be superhero related again.
No.
2 weeks in a row. Is it horror related?
No. Well, not really, no. No.
Okay.
We're going to say no.
Is it vampire related?
No.
So it's not Dark Shadows?
No. We already had a Dark Shadows.
Oh, did we? Okay. So, okay, it's not horror related?
Mm-mm.
And it's, okay, which means it's not vampire related. Is it, science fiction related?
Yes.
Is it Prometheus?
It is.
So that's Charlize Theron?
Yes.
I forget who else is in it.
Yeah, I imagine. Well, I'll give it to you.
Okay.
I wouldn't probably even have gotten Prometheus.
Yeah.
Michael Fassbender and Noomi Rapace?
That's not Girl with Dragon Tattoo, no.
No.
No, it's somebody else.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the only science fiction movie that I've seen any ads for, so I figured it had to be that.
It could have been that, or it could have been the Nazis from the Moon.
Oh, that's not going to get it.
I want Nazis from the Moon.
I would love to see that as a cover, but there's no way they're going to get a cover. I just don't see that happening.
I'm going to promote that movie now on my own.
Yes. Iron Sky, by the way, guys.
Nazis from the Moon.
That's right. Not out to the summer. It's out in Europe now. It's almost like a Kickstarter project because they had all these individual investors in it, and it was all brought together kind of bootstrapped. Go on YouTube and look for Iron Sky, and you can see the trailers. It's really impressive, and it looks both scary and goofy at the same time.
Yes.
I want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my blog about Hogan's Heroes and Star Trek The Next Generation, not in the same blog entry. You can subscribe via iTunes and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us at Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.